So the title of the talk tonight is This Life, What a Gift. So we're sitting here, we breathe in, we breathe out. We get up, we sit down. We go in, we go out. We eat, we go to the toilet. We wake up, we go to sleep. We're happy, and 10 minutes later, or the next day, we're miserable. Birth and death. Frustrated and relaxed, and everything's fine. And then it's not. This duality, which in Dharma language you call samsara. Now this, now this, now this, now this. Actually, I once saw a film with some young people learning history. And one young boy said, I know what is history. It's one thing after another. And we did get a sense that, wait a minute, samsara, is that it? That's it? That's the whole story of our life? And Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, make a big story about this. Now is the time to build, the time to destroy, the time to live, the time to die, time to be healthy, time to be sick, time for winter, time for summer. And the conclusion of Kohelet is, it's all pointless. There's no point to it. The Dharma would say, yes, turn away from samsara. Turn, indeed, become disenchanted. Come out of the spell of samsara. Turn away. But it's not pointless, but we need to turn to somewhere else. And I like the word turning. Joanne Macy used that word and called, she's an old-time Dharma teacher and a professor, and she called the practice the great turning. And the Buddha gave similar language. He said, it's a lion's roar, the first talk, the lion's roar. It's such a strong thing. Turn away from that samsaric one thing after another, turn somewhere else, to something that's not that. Song by Pete Seeger, which I like, and is afterwards repeated by the Doors. This song actually repeats Kohelet, the this and then that, and now time for this, time for that. But in Pete Seeger's song, he comes to the same conclusion. He says, turn, turn, turn. Turn towards everything. So it's kind of a movement coming out of that, getting lost in samsara feeling, now this, now that. Turn towards something else. To what? Well, very, very basically, one place to turn to is, who is it that is seeing things like that? Who is seeing things like now this, now that? What is the person that's looking at life like that? Where does that come from? What is the seeing that sees things stuck and samsaric? What kind of seeing drops us into this Kohelet, pointless wheel of samsara? What is it? What's the seeing? And what is the seeing that isn't there? What kind of mind, what kind of heart is bigger than that? Where do we find the resources, the energy, the encouragement to be bigger than that. What do we turn to? What kind of mind do we turn to that is aware, bigger than that? And so this really shifts what we're doing here to another place. We are not in the place of doing technical mindfulness because it's helpful and a bit peaceful to do some mindfulness. It straight away puts what we're doing here into existential importance for our life. Awareness then becomes a place where we discover new worlds that we didn't know before or we didn't notice before. Awareness becomes a place of opening, turning towards somewhere else, or should we say beyond. It's not somewhere, but it's beyond that duality. And the Dharma is really the word that does beautifully describe it. Because it's very hard to find language for what is it that is not the samsaric dualities. Hard to find the language for it. But Dharma is a good word. And it really means the deeper truth of things. It means turning towards what is not illusion, what is not the way things just seem to be, what is not the pointless, waking, sleeping, miserable, happy. The Dharma is a truth of things that's deeper than that. It always goes with an agenda, a direction. And everything we're doing here has a direction. Turn, turn, turn towards liberation. That's a big word. I won't go into it now. Every one of us will have a different impression of what that means, liberation. And everyone who has a sense of what that means, everything is right. There's no wrong answer here. It's all right. Everything you think about when you hear the word liberation is fine. It's bigger than every thought about it. But it's important, just the message is that liberation is a movement or a direction or kind of a compass, matzpen, which is behind everything we're doing and giving us a direction. It's not just technical. It's not just, well, a bit helpful. There's a direction behind. So what we practice here is basically being aware. And when you kind of understand that that's the agenda and behind it is liberation, but what we're doing is opening, we're turning towards what really is happening in our experience, and it's bigger than just Tovli Rali, good for me, not good for me, the dualities. So if we see that that's happening, then it gives more respect. We have the tools for that. And the tool is the tool of awareness. And awareness includes mind and heart together. It's the wise heart that begins to know things more deeply. And it starts with simple things. This experience right now, this body is telling me stories. The trees outside, the taste of the rice. That's where it starts. It's our awareness in life begins to take us to another place. Show us, turn towards something which is bigger. So we are kind of hour after hour enjoying, celebrating, sometimes crying, But what it is that we experience is aliveness, our aliveness. In all the different forms. My back is hurting. Now it's not hurting. Now I feel really fine. Now I'm tired. But wait a minute. What's behind all of that aliveness? Now my mind full of thoughts. I can't meditate at all. It's just full of rubbish there. Aliveness. We may not want our mind to be all the time in Israeli politics. Doesn't matter. Aliveness. The mind is alive, telling stories. The body is alive, telling stories. The trees are alive, telling stories. The nature, the sky, the earth. So we're listening, we're there with things. And it's the big movie. We don't need Netflix. It's right here. There's nothing better. We've got it all. Slowly, slowly, the direction, the sense of, shall we say, the hint of a liberating way of working with awareness is that we begin to see ourselves as free beings looking at our experience. A free being holding our experience, which is pleasant, unpleasant, now breathe in, now breathe out, now this, now this, now this, samsara. We're a free being looking at samsara instead of being totally inside it. And that's a very big change, and it happens bit by bit. Slowly, slowly, slowly. Those of you who've done many retreats, do I need another retreat? I've done all these retreats. Why do I need another one? Yes, it's okay. It's a healthy, beneficial process. It's never ending. It's not that we do 5 retreats and we're done. That's it, finished. It's a never ending process. The Buddha was practicing all his life. So it's slowly, slowly we discover what it means to be a free being welcoming our changing experiences. And that gets bigger and more interesting all the time. So, just encouraging, there's no experience too small for this. It's still an experience. Breathing is an experience. The weight of the body on the ground is an experience. The touch of the feet on the earth is an experience. Actually, these experiences, in a way, are more important than, in many ways, than big philosophical ideas. In a way, they're more important. Like Meister Eckhart, a mystic. Medieval mystic said, don't talk about God, don't talk about beings, don't talk about beyond. This rock is enough. That's all you need to talk about and think about. This tree, this rock, this is the essence. So this breath, this presence, here we are, this body. So what happens as we practice is that we keep discovering more layers. We discover, we see something, we see, annoying thoughts. Wait a minute, what's under them? Where do they come from? Pitom, there's this series of stupid thoughts about something. Where did that come from? Or suddenly a bunch of fears, worries about what might happen tomorrow, next week, next year. Where did that come from? Just stay with things. Stay with things. Watch the way they unfold. Stay with your experience. We don't have to fight and to get more concentration. Just stay with things. Give them a bit more space and respect. Stay with the breathing, stay with the body, stay with the mind that is taking you and bringing you back and taking you, bringing you back. Just stay there. In the text, the translation is abiding, lishot, to stay with things. And again and again and again, they will show you other layers underneath. A lot of the practice is inside, and I think this is helpful. The body, the inner world. This is helpful partly because we're so full of acting outside. So it makes a balance. What is the inner world? What's the one that sees the world? But slowly, slowly, we do. And this is where, for example, walking meditation is so helpful. Slowly, slowly, we begin to have more awareness of the world. So when we're walking, eyes open, we are connected to the world. Something happens there. We are in the world. We begin to know the world just like we know our own thoughts. We begin to know the world. And in brackets, Sograim, I would say the world begins to know us. I'm sitting, when I have a bit of time, even in this retreat, working on my new book. And the book is very much about action in nature, in life, in building a building and so on. But I remember when we first started to live in Klil, the very beginning, and the book talks about this. We used to sit in the evenings and discuss. We put all of our life into starting a new place. Like we gave up everything. I gave up being a lecturer and a teacher in a university in London, and other people gave up everything to start something new. A few families living in the hills. And we started Klil. And one of the things, the messages that we were talking about it, is to start to live with nature is not about how we look at nature, but about how nature looks at us. And that was one of the themes with which we started the village. So that's in brackets, because I'm writing about it now in my new book, but every relationship is two directions. We look at, but we are seen. We look at our body, but our body sees us. It's two directions. Everything is, and we look at the world looks at us. It cannot be one way, or one way, Hatsitri. So, a lot of letting go, a lot of staying with things, but not too much struggle. Consistency rather than struggle and a lot of effort. I was reading some quotes from a British author called Douglas Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And one quote, which I love, actually Rob Berbea used it as well. How do you fly? You throw yourself on the ground and miss. And then you're flying. In a way, that's what we're doing. We're letting go into our experience, and we find ourselves flying. We may not hit the place we want to hit. Doesn't matter. we're there with things. With less effort. In our instructions, we used words like welcoming, words like allowing, trusting, Simi mentioned yesterday. These are important language, refuge. This is important language because it gives us a basis of our relationship to our experience. In relation to this retreat, we are going to be slowly connecting more and more with the wisdom of the heart. The heart has its way of looking. It's not so different. The mind and the heart are constantly in dialogue. There isn't two departments, mind department and heart department. They're actually one thing. But the more we are connecting to the simple things of life, we will find the heart is just going to be there. It will not be neutral. We're walking outside, we will feel slowly, slowly, our heart is going to be part of that. We're walking on this earth, it has meaning, it touches the heart. Slowly, slowly, we'll find our heart engaged there. Feelings will be there. We'll listen to the nature, and the nature will touch us a little bit. We begin to appreciate small things, which we otherwise, we're looking over them. We begin to appreciate small things. When we look at the breath, we can't not appreciate the breath of life. Maybe not at the beginning, but after a while, we will see how precious this breath is. We will notice it. It's precious. This body, precious. This life, precious. This endure, precious. Each other, so precious. It will touch us. It's not artificial that we have to invent it. We will just notice it. Wow. Little moments of wow. And as we appreciate small things, the heart is seeing and connected more with our life. The heart just becomes more engaged. It'll happen by itself, but we'll also encourage it. Things arise because they arise. Things arise because they're needed. Because nature, even all these stupid thoughts, they are arising because they're needed. Because something in us, the thoughts say, this is the time. So we begin to appreciate things, even stupid thoughts. Because they're coming, because they're needed. That is the time for them. This is the time for this breath. This is the time to breathe in. This is the time to breathe out. Something there engages our heart. We begin to appreciate things more. And in this retreat, we can actively begin to notice that. Just appreciate, wow, yeah. It's coming because it's needed to come right now. So one place that I want to express right now is the place of gratitude, Hodaya. Gratitude. And it's really important because it's a shift. We often find ourselves living in quite a contracted place where we kind of feel what I'm doing is coping. I'm coping, I'm managing with my life. And gratitude takes us to another place. Beyond just managing with my life, gratitude tells us life is a gift. And the only thing to do with the gift is say, thank you. We can be grateful for small things. We can be grateful for everything we see. As Obama said when Trump was elected, he said, don't forget the sun still rises in the morning. Don't forget, but it's really for all of us. Don't forget that the sun still rises in the morning. Even though we think our mind is full of all this stuff, but wait a minute, the sun still rises in the morning. We can practice gratitude. We can remember gratitude. It's something that we can actually encourage. We can remember what it's like to be a child. We can remember how much we've been given in our life, non-stop. We can remember we are given our life itself. I read a book some time ago by an African shaman called Malidoma Some. Some of you may have heard about him or seen in YouTube. And it was really it called Spirit and Water. It was a very powerful book. And as an African shaman in an African village that was kind of invaded by Europeans, and then they took many of the children to become missionarium. But the Christians took children and put them into homes. And what was really touching was he said to be a shaman and to be in our village, we wake up in the morning with gratitude. But to be a European invading our country and taking over everything, they come with so much misery and unhappiness that they have only thing they can do is go to some faraway place and take it over because they're coming with dissatisfaction. I was very touched by the way, from the shaman point of view, looking at the whole of Western culture as a culture of non-satisfaction, of dissatisfaction, of restless neediness. And I know it sounds a bit radical, but if you look at our culture, I think we can all understand that. A restless neediness, dissatisfaction. When my granddaughters want to go to the Kenyonim, I do have that memory in my mind. Yes, it's the temple of dissatisfaction. But gratitude is a beautiful emotion, and it takes us in another direction. And I want to read you a poem that was written by Gary Snyder, who's an ecological poet, and also from the Dharma many years ago. He writes, gratitude to Mother Earth, sailing through night and day, and to her soil, rich and sweet. Gratitude to plants, the sun-facing, light-changing leaf, and the fine hairs of the roots, standing still through wind and rain. Gratitude to air, carrying the soaring swift snoniot and the silent owl at dawn. It's the breath of our songs. Gratitude to wild animals, our brothers, teaching secrets, freedoms, and ways, who share with us their milk. Gratitude to water, clouds, lakes, rivers, holding or releasing, streaming through all bodies, salty seas. Gratitude to the sun, blinding light through trunks of trees, through mists, warming caves where the bears and the snakes are asleep. He who wakes us up. Gratitude to the great sky that holds billions of stars and goes beyond all powers and thoughts, and yet is within us. Grandfather space, the mind is your wife. So we will and do experience also difficult experiences. This is the nature of samsara. We will experience resistance, we will experience emotions. All of this sounds very beautiful, but then we may come up with all kinds of blocks and issues. But we have to kind of understand, we allow them to. They are taking their place. Our resistance, our tiredness, our anger, our frustration, our judgment of ourselves or others, they have their place. They come because they're the voices of the world through us. So we don't need to get shocked or worried, or we say, I'm failing because I don't have this blissful, grateful heart opening. Part of opening the heart is to allow whatever it is that closes the heart, and knowing it for what it is, and not be shocked if our heart is closed, and not be worried by a closed heart. Let it open and close also. Find our limits, meet our limits. It's okay. That's the voice of samsara. We need to meet that voice, but we are still a free being meeting those voices. Seeing, letting things come, letting things go. Everything comes and everything goes. Everything arises. Visitors, guests. And we're still there. Here we are, welcoming the next guests, the ones on their way. We're still here, free beings opening the door to the guests and remembering, also you, I thank. Also you. Very often, our difficult experiences actually coming from a very heartful place. Very often, difficult experiences are coming because we want to get things right. We want things to be better. We want something to work for us. We want actually love. But it's dressed up in needs and in voices and in frustrations and in anxiety and fears. But very often our difficult experiences and our blocks, our limits, are actually coming from a place of wanting things to be right, wanting things to be better. We can say that too, thank you. I have in me a motive for things to be better, and I say thank you for that. Although it can lead me into difficult places and difficult experiences. As we practice, slowly, slowly, we encourage our heart to be kinder we encourage our mind to be bigger. We just slowly, slowly come out of a contracted place and less blocks, less limits. It happens because of being close to our genuine experience, intimacy. It happens through intimacy. And intimacy can be with a difficult experience just as much as a pleasant experience. Intimacy with the guests that we like and the guests that we don't like. The intimacy does the job. There the heart is triggered. The sense of closeness. Here I am with this moment. There's something, kaze kadosh, Elohi, in that. This moment, this breath, this body, the insects, the leaves, the look in the eyes of another person. So, a lot of the practice happening by itself, we have intention and we have make some effort, but there's a lot that's happening by itself. And one, I would say, key is as we become more interested and close to our actual experience, then we also become close to the world. If we are close to a breath, we're also close to the sky above. If we are feeling connected, intimate, our heart is touched. It happens by itself. We don't need to all measure results. It's happening, it's not happening, how much, and not a little. It happens by itself. And this is bhava, development. This is how we develop our resources. We allow them to happen, we allow them to grow. All we do is be there with attention, appreciation, care, eyes open, and stay with things. Everything else happens by itself. Thank you. So we'll take 10 minutes of quiet.